Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, Commander.
What?
You got a prescription for this?
Yeah.
Where is that? Where is that?
It's
Where?
I
can take your ass, dear. You know that?
What?
Look at this!
That's nothing but cigarette, man.
This cigarette weed!
Well, it looks like a cigarette.
Smoke weed every day.
Oh, that's hot. That's hot.
Yes, indeed. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Big Exclusives. It is October 22nd, another Tuesday, and I want to say what's up to all of our listeners out there, especially our international listeners out there, all the listeners in the chat room. You now know what time it is. It is now 3 p.m. Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, meaning that Big Exclusives is on. So tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend that we are live, and we have a great show lined up for you today. I am your host, Philo the Great, as well as celebrity consultant, Valerie Denise Jones. So with no further delay, we're going to go ahead to this music break. And this is from our guest. We have a special guest in the building with us today, and we're going to play this song. This song is called At War. At War. And I believe it's The World Is At War. Let me make sure that I get it. I believe it's The World Is At War. And this is by our special guest, James D. Trey Williams. So, yes, it is The World Is At War. So I was correct by saying that. So with that being said, we're going to go to music break, play this song. When we come back, we'll be joined by our special guest, Mr. James D. Train Williams. So with that being said, here it is. The World Is At War.
Terrorism against our nation will not stand.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. Answers, bring them on.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
I'm the decider, and I decide what is best.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
There's a child in the street crying, listen to me. You pretend you don't see. Where is your heart? Where's the peace without pain? Where's the joy without shame? Are they one and the same? Where is your God? The truth at the door, can we ignore?
Exclusives. I am your host, Philo the Great. That was The World is at War by my special guest, who is in the building with us today, Mr. D-Train. So, D-Train is an American singer, songwriter, instrumentalist, producer, and actor. A lot, I know. He rose to fame in the early 1980s with the release of his first album, You're the One for Me. Working with songwriter-producer Hubert, I believe that's Ease the Third, initially as a duo, which spawned his first Billboard Dance Chart number one hit, You're the One for Me. So with no further ado, let's welcome to the show Mr. D-Train Williams.
What's up, what's up, what's up? How you doing, Steve? How you doing, my brother? Thank you so much for having me today.
No problem, no problem.
Good to be in the mix, brother.
Yes, it is. But it's good to always, for myself, when I do these type of shows, I learn a lot. And so to have you here, we always like to pay homage. So first of all, I'd like to start by paying homage by saying thank you for doing what you have done in the music business as a songwriter, instrumentalist, producer, as well as an actor. You know what I mean? You have a extensive resume and a large body of work, and it's to be recognized and to be saluted. So I want to salute that right here. And again, thank you.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you. You know what? It was interesting to hear The World is at War. I haven't heard it since I wrote it. Because, you know,
yes,
radio being what it is, it's like, you know, you only get the top 10, and trying to get it on radio over here in the States is really hard. And so I really appreciate you getting into the crates and checking it out and playing it for the people, man, because it was an important song. When I was writing it, it was like, you know, it was during that time when George Bush took the country to war. And it was about social consciousness when a lot of artists try to be quiet like they are today. And nobody's talking about what's going on up in the White House because everybody's afraid of their record not being sold. So I think that, like Marvin, you see, because my teachers were Marvin Gaye and Donny Hathaway and those people of the like. So when something is going wrong, yeah, we're not politicians, we're not preachers, we're not orators, but our music can speak for us, just like Prince, you know. And so I think it's our obligation to speak up and say something through our music that affects the way the world think about what's going on in our society. We got to still have that voice. And for so long, we've been silent. So I thank you for playing that, brother.
No problem, no problem. And thank you to our other half, Valerie Denise Jones. She's the producer. And,
thank you, Valerie.
You know, she deserves that credit as well. I wanted to, being that you brought up Marvin, being that you brought up Donny Hathaway, these were your influences. So I wanted to ask, when did the music really become when you started doing music, when did it become like, I want to tell a message, a real message, and not just make music? Like, when did that really hit home? Did you have to mature in that? Or when you started making music, that was the basis of your music to tell a message from the day you started?
Well, you know, I grew up in the church. I grew up in Church of God in Christ in New York, and I did my first professional recording when I was 15 years old with Reverend Timothy Wright, who had the Timothy Wright Concert Choir. So I tried to do gospel when I turned 18, but, you know, I even went to the Clark sisters, Twinkie Clark and them, and, you know, everybody, gospel then was not what it was now. You had the Clark singers, you had the Clark sisters, you had Walter Hawkins, and you had Andre Crouch at the top of the charts. This was before the Winans even came on the scene. So getting into gospel music, you only had one label. That was Savoy Records at the time. And Savoy wasn't really a place that I wanted to be. So I met with Hubert Ease III. I was singing backgrounds on a Will Downing record, and I got to meet with Hubert Ease III, and, you know, he was like, well, you know, Will says your name is D-Train, man. I said, yeah, I was playing football at the time. He said, well, let's bring that over into your professional thing, and we wanted the music to be powerful. We wanted it to be strong. But my message to him, I don't know if it was so much about positivity, but I was like, if I can't sing it in front of my mother, then I ain't going to sing it at all. You know, that was my, you know, my mother set those boundaries within my life that there are lines that you don't cross, especially if you've been raised right. You don't cross certain lines. So I wasn't going to be cussing and carrying on all on my records. And, you know, my mom and my dad came to most of my concerts just like they came to most of my football games. So so I wanted it to be effectual, but I wanted it to have a message. And I think the message, I grew into the message. Because at 21 years old, writing Keep On and You're the One for Me, I hadn't lived that much of a life to really understand the full gravitas of those songs. It wasn't until I was in my 30s, maybe early 40s, and you have to live and you go through some stuff that you understand, oh, this is what Keep On means. Oh, you know. And then when you start living it, now you understand what effect it had on other people. I had guys write me from prison talking about, listen, man, I'm in here for the next 18 years, or, you know, I'm doing a life sentence. I ain't never getting out. But your song is helping me get through my 23-hour days until I can get to the yard. And I was like, okay. So I appreciate it because it affected so many lives in and out of prison, around the world, in Africa, globally. Just to have a voice in people's lives, it was better to me than a Grammy Award or any type of award. The award is the hearts that you touch, the people's lives that you move. And the older you get, it's not about being on a television show. It's about how many people can you bring about effectual change in their life through your song. So when I do a concert, I leave it all on the floor because I want you to leave feeling better than when you got there. Because, see, when people come to concerts, a lot of times somebody broke up with their husband, broke up with their wife, their girlfriend left them, boyfriend left them, kids ran away from school, or the son might have just got arrested. You don't know what people's circumstances are. But one time when they hear that music, it takes them to a place of relief. It takes them to a place of acceptance. And if you have a message behind that acceptance that gravitates to their heart and their mind, then they can leave there with somewhat of a solution to their problem. And that's what I hope my music can do.
Right, and that's what music does. I often tell people that music is the only thing that I know, that you can hear a song and will know exactly what you was doing the first time you heard that song. It's your jam. So you can be like, man, I remember when that song first came out, I was doing XYZ because that was your jam. And music is one of the only things I know that does that. That you can hear a certain particular song and go back in time so vividly in your mind. And I don't know nothing else that does that besides music.
When you feel your favorite song, you can remember, like when I hear the Gap Band, I remember I was standing on my grandmother's porch with shorts. It was August. It was 1975. And I was just sitting on my grandma's porch in North Carolina. And I heard the Gap Band. My cousin Larry put it on. And it was a You Can Count on Me. And that was my first Charlie Wilson experience, you know. And I was like, wow. And I told Charlie that when I had him on my show, because I used to have a show at Sirius XM Radio. And I had Charlie on the show, and we got to talk about it because we were on the road together for a quick minute. But it's interesting. It's exactly like you said. You remember if you broke up with your girlfriend when you hear, let's just kiss and say goodbye? You can remember who the girl was, what her name was, what she was wearing when she left you.
And that is so true about music, man. So I wanted to talk about really how did you, like, then – Kojic, meaning Church of God in Christ. For those listeners who don't know what Kojic is, that's just Church of God in Christ. All right, so coming from a Kojic background, like, how did you end up in the secular music? Like, because I know back then, I know they probably were like, that's the devil music, baby. You can't be singing that devil music. So
well, you see, I had two champions that went out before me. In the 50s, out of Washington Temple came Sammy Fletcher. He was big out on the West Coast doing R&B. He sang like the Soul Stirrers out there back in the 50s. And then in the 70s, my choir director, see, when I was a kid growing up, Ronnie Dyson was my choir director and Al Sharpton was my junior church minister for the young people.
Okay.
So when Ronnie went out there, Ronnie had a big number one hit with If You Let Me Make Love to You, Why Can't I Touch You, 1971. And so he was the first one from my church to go out there doing secular music. When I tried to do gospel, and it didn't pan out, and then I got a deal with Prelude Records in 81, I went to my pastor, and I said, you know, Pops, I need your permission to go do my thing, you know, because I had already had a kid by that time. And I said, I got to support my family, you know. I was working at Merrill Lynch as a security guard on Broadway in Manhattan across from the old World Trade Center. And that wasn't enough money to support a girlfriend and a child. So when I got the deal, you know, it was just never looking back from then. And it was a blessing. He said, listen, I'm going to tell you something. As long as you keep God first, he'll make you second. You know, you keep God first in your life, everything else will work out for you. And ever since, you know, I've done that my whole career. You know, you always keep God in the forefront of your life or whatever you choose to call God. Because as I grew up, I realized that not everything in terms of religion was pointed to what is going on in the world until I walked into Japan. And I went inside the big Buddha, and I went down where the monks used to pray, six stories below the earth's surface. And I felt the spirit of God down there. Now, these are Japanese monks in Asia. So why did I feel the spirit in there? That wasn't the Church of God in Christ. And that, not to say that God wasn't there. And so when I came out of there, I was full of tears. And there were people lighting incense like they do in the movies to the gods and to the spirits and stuff and laying out fruit because that's the way they do for their dead. I cried and bought some fruit and some incense and put it in there too. And I learned that God is in all things and in all people and in all religions, because when you look at all religions, they're talking about a higher power. They're talking about doing the right thing with your life and helping others and transforming the lives of others and being a good person yourself and living your life as an example. So I think God is in all things and in all people, but we call him different names. It's the Jewish people call him Yeshua, you know, Yeshua. The Muslims call him Muhammad. The Japanese and the Chinese call him Buddha, you know, and black people call him Jesus. And then, you know, the Christians call him God. So it's like everybody has a different name they're calling him, but they're mad at the other group because you called him Yeshua. His name ain't Yeshua, it's God, it's Jesus. If you don't call him Jesus, you're in the wrong religion. And I got out of religion. I got into my own personal relationship with him, to where I pray to him every morning, I talk to him every morning on my own. And I don't subscribe to any one particular religion, because I've learned that there were great teachers in all religions. You know, Elisha Muhammad was a great teacher. Farrakhan was a great teacher. You know, Gandhi was a great teacher. So, you know, I mean, Mahatma Gandhi gave the greatest lesson in saying, be the change that you want to see in others. And I didn't understand what he meant when he first said that, but I had to learn. Be the change that you want to see in others. So many times as people, we're trying to change our kids, trying to change our wives or our husband. You can't change somebody else. The only person that you can change is yourself. You can't save anybody but yourself. So what you need to do mm-hmm. is focus on you. Every day you get up, focus on you. What are your goals? What is your attributes? What are you good at? What are you lacking? And when you focus on those things, you get better, because there's one word that puts it all together: discipline. You get up each morning, you discipline yourself to pray. You discipline yourself to get into the gym. You discipline yourself to get into the radio station and do what you do. You discipline mm-hmm. yourself to go to work and make that money and pay your rent. One word does it all for you, brings it under one roof. And once you do discipline, everything else is easy, because people like to do things in their comfort zone. But the comfort zone and your comfort and your convenience does not live on the same block as your conviction. Your conviction and your convenience live in two different area codes. They don't even share the same bedroom. Your conviction tells people who you are. Your convenience tells people what you won't do and what you might do when the lights is off and ain't nobody looking. But that goes into character and who you are as a person. See, personality is what you are when everybody else is around. People may know you as a personality, you know, but then character defines you when everybody else leaves the room and there's nobody in there but you looking at you in the mirror. Then who are you? Because that's who you are really. And that's, you know, that's everything in a nutshell.
And that's dope. That's so dope. So listen, discipline. What do you call discipline? For those out there who lack discipline, what are some steps that they can start getting better and get stronger in their discipline?
Well, the thing, okay, for the people that want to lose weight, okay, everybody say, I want to lose weight. Why are they buying the apple pie? Why are they getting that ice cream? Okay, first thing you got to do to lose weight is change your diet. Now, you can't change your diet until you change your mind. The first thing you do in any discipline is you got to change your mind. Because until you change your mind, your diet ain't going to work. Your discipline ain't going to work. Nothing works. Mm-hmm. What happens is when you change your mind, see, you got a lot of people out there doing lap band surgery and cutting their half their stomach off so they can look thin. Then they go back to eating ice cream, and then they get fat all over again, bust out the bands, get sick and die. Until you change your mind, you ain't going to change your lifestyle. And until you change your lifestyle, you ain't going to change the way you are. You want to lose weight? Change your mind. Say that I'm going to get into the gym. And you don't have to take big steps. Martin Luther King said you don't have to see the whole staircase. Just take the first step. And you got some people, you got to take it in baby steps. Okay, Monday, I'm going to discipline myself. I'm going to eat more salad. We're going to do it one day at a time. Monday, I'm going to eat a salad for lunch, and I'll have a regular dinner. Have two hard-boiled eggs for breakfast. Boom. And I'll drink water instead of drinking Pepsi Cola. I'll cut soda out the diet and get seltzer water or flavored seltzer water to take up the taste that the soda has. Won't buy fried chicken. I'll buy broiled chicken. I'll cut out some of the apple pies, and I'll buy some fruits instead. It's those little simple changes that control the body weight and bring it down.
Mm-hmm.
Most big people are just water weight. All you got, and, you know, people think, I need to join the gym. No, you don't. All you need to do is walk around the block three times. Just walk around your block three times a day. I'm telling you, I started by walking in a park by my house. And I've always been in the gym. I mean, I trained with my children in Taekwondo martial arts back in the 90s. All of us became black belts. They went to black belt. I was supposed to test for my second degree black belt, but I blew out my knee. But I got as high as second degree, and I never was able to complete it. But after that, I joined the gym. Now, what I learned was that until you change your diet, ain't nothing else going to happen. You can stay in the gym. You're still going to be big. So about a year ago, I got real serious. I'm coming up on my 58th birthday. Ain't ashamed to say it. But at 57, I look better than I did in my 20s, my 30s, and my 40s, because I could see my abs. and that all happened because I changed my mind. I changed my diet. I got in the gym, and I started walking 117 miles a month and lifting weight 5 days a week. And that's what I do. That's my discipline. I get into my office over here in Manhattan. I go around the corner to the gym, I get it in for an hour and a half, come back over here and do my work, and then walk back to the depot where, you know, I catch the bus back to New Jersey. I don't take public transportation unless it's really bad weather here in New York. I walk everywhere. So it's 3 miles a day back and forth to my job, and then I have a park up by my house where it's 5.5 miles. So when you do that, you can do 117 miles a day, or you can do what the equivalent of 15,000 steps a day. I put a pedometer in my phone so I can measure how many steps a day I take. But when you're doing 117 miles a month, you don't need to run nowhere.
Right.
But
right.
There's those little
because
disciplines. I started my discipline with walking. I don't like running. Mm-hmm. I ran enough when I was in high school playing football. I ain't crazy about jogging. I ain't crazy about running. So I just said I will walk at a speedy pace and get to where I got to go. And it was it for me. And it works. I'm down to 199 pounds. And all the years that I did D-Train music, I was 300 pounds, man.
Wow. So with anything, with any change, with any discipline, it starts with your mindset. You have
starts
to change
with
your
mindset.
And you have to have the mindset to change. You have to have the mindset to want to improve in order to change anything. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. Because, see, people always think things are outward battle. Things are, everything going to change from the outside in. If I change, if I get the money, I can buy the new house. If I get the money, I can buy the new car. But until you change your mind, see, you have to change the value of who you are. Are you worth more to your company? Are you worth more to your bosses or your employers? Are you worth more to the company if you got your own company? How do you make more money? Because everything around us is going up except your salary. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting harder and harder for most Americans to pay their bills. How do you do that when the politicians are playing politics? You know, and you can blame it on the white man and say, you know, the white man did this and the black man did this and they're keeping us down. You can hold on to that untruth all you want. If that was the case, we wouldn't have Oprah Winfrey, and we doggone sure enough wouldn't have Barack Obama. So with those two people alone, all of our excuses went out the window. Because if a black man can become president and a black woman become a trillionaire or a billionaire, women ain't got no excuse and men sure enough ain't got one. Because we are leaders, we were born leaders. And we're going to die leaders if we choose to lead. Everything is a choice. Do you choose to be average? You can choose to be average. You can choose to be below average. You know, you could choose. You know, a lot of things I learned coming up. I grew up in the hood in Brooklyn. You know, around me, people were getting stabbed and dying in the doorway. And a lot of my friends died when I was a kid. But my father told me, he said, the ghetto is not a place of being. The ghetto is a state of mind. He said, now, if you believe you belong here, you're going to belong here, and you're going to stay here, and you will never leave. See, they built the ghettos back in the 1960s when they killed Martin Luther King. Black people burnt this country to the ground. Detroit, New York, everywhere. Chicago was on fire. Lyndon B. Johnson, President Lyndon B. Johnson, after JFK got assassinated and Robert got assassinated, said, listen, we got to come up with a plan because these black folks is burning this country to the ground. What did he do? He came up with a plan. We will house you. We will feed you. We'll build all brand new housing for you, and we'll call it welfare. Do you accept? And we did. And when we accepted that welfare thing, now we have third and fourth and fifth generation welfare recipients on a plan that was set up by the government. You can blame
the
government. The
Democrats.
But,
was it the Republicans? The Democrats, correct?
Republican. Democrats were for the poor people. JFK and RFK were Democrats. Lyndon was a Republican.
But it was the
Lyndon Johnson wouldn't even meet with Adam Clayton Powell here in New York City, who was the most prominent preacher and outspoken lobbyman in New York. You know, what happens is we took the bait. But then they gave us another, they threw out another carrot, started dangling it in front of our faces. Ain't no black people in the White House. So they started inviting black people, congressmen and district congressmen from different districts like Baltimore and New York, up to work in the White House. And Martin Luther King said in a meeting at Harry Belafonte's house, and I heard it from Harry Belafonte himself, he said, "Harry, we're walking into a burning building." And you know why he said that? Because once black people got into the White House, they started doing what the white people told them to do, acting the way the white people told them to act. And now it created a upper crust black man, black woman. So now I live in the white neighborhood where the white man lives, and you are beneath me. Even though you're my black brother, I ain't coming to live where you live. Now, I'm not saying you got to live in the hood. Everybody wants to get in a nice neighborhood where their kids won't be shot at and gangs don't live. I understand that. And you don't have to live in a diversified neighborhood. I'd probably rather live in a white neighborhood because I don't belong there, and you said I couldn't live there. But because my father couldn't live there, I'm going to live here because you said he couldn't. You know, people don't think about Madam C.J. Johnson. Madam C.J. Johnson was the first, before Oprah, was the first black woman millionaire with hair care products, bought a mansion that still exists, still stands, upstate New York on the Hudson River. She got an 8-bedroom mansion that she had in the 1930s. You don't hear that in our history books, but it's still standing. So what happens is we become what we believe. And that's why I say watch your thoughts, because your thoughts become your words. Watch your words, because your words become your actions. Watch your actions, because your actions become your destiny. When your actions become your destiny, what you believe in, people will often wonder, people can hear what you say, but they won't believe you until they see what you do. When they see you act out on your conviction, then they're like, oh, man, he's serious. He do want to be the number one radio cat. Yeah, let's follow him. People didn't follow Puffy. You know, they were following Biggie. they were following Biggie in New York because he was from the hood. Hey. Puffy was from a prep school upstate. He was just hanging on Big's collar. And then once Big put him on, you know, everything just escalated from there, and they became Bad Boy Entertainment. But what happens is, when you say that you can, you can't. Huh?
I wanted to address that welfare thing because I don't want to mislead the listeners. And I was specific because I'm with you on that. I'm with you on the creation. I agree with exactly what you just said of the welfare, all that. But I didn't agree with the creation of the welfare. I didn't agree with that. It was the Democrats who started the welfare system.
They suggested it in Congress. See, that's why Martin Luther King said we're walking into a burning building. They could suggest it because it had to pass a vote. Everything in the White House has to pass a vote. So until it passed that vote by the Democrats, the Republicans couldn't put it into effect. But they were the ones that was glad that it came about. You see what I'm saying? Because once you put us up in that White House, we act like you and we do what you say.
But it was signed off by a Democratic president who the Democratic Party had elected, and that was Franklin D. Roosevelt. Franklin D. Roosevelt signed off on the Social Security Act. Social Security Act. He signed off on that. But during the Great Depression of the 1930s, the 1930s is when the welfare system came into play.
The welfare system came into play in 1962 or 63. Because when they killed Martin Luther King, I will never forget it. Every television went black, and all you saw was Jesse Jackson on that. They froze everything on every television screen. And Martin Luther King, and there were riots all over New York. I was riding up the FDR Drive. Harlem was burning down. L.A. was burning down. Chicago, Detroit, everything was burning down. They had to come up with a solution to our people. The Black Panthers were rising. They had to come up with a solution to black anarchy. that's how it was actually developed, because how you going to stop the fight? How you going to stop the flames? There was no, it was like worse than a Rodney King verdict coming out. You know what I mean? It was worse than O.J. getting set free. This was, you kill Martin Luther King. And see, the problem with our people has always been, when we get pissed off, we burn down our house. We don't go to the white neighborhood and burn down their house. We stay right where we live and start busting open windows, breaking down stores.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it causes commerce and it causes chaos, but it's in your neighborhood. So now where you going to shop now that you ain't got no supermarket? You should have gotten your car and drove out to the other neighbors and did that stuff. Not in your neighborhood. That don't make no sense.
So I want to read this to you. Although President Franklin D. Roosevelt focused mainly on creating jobs for masses of unemployment workers, he also bagged the idea of federal aid for poor children and other dependent persons. By 1935, a national welfare system had been established for the first time in American history.
Okay, I'm trying to find it here on my thing. The welfare beginning.
Sir, while we're while we got this this kind of pause,
debate.
I really would like to say something that you said, Mr. Williams.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mr. I really would like to, I don't want to move too far. The first, you said Madam T.J. Johnson, and then T.J. Walker was her last name.
That's what I meant to say, Walker, yeah.
Yeah, she's one of my heroes. But I also wanted to applaud you, because I really think that a lot of our people, we have a guest that's coming on Friday, and a lot, we're going to talk about Republican versus Democrat. So I don't think it's, you know, by chance that we're having this conversation today, because this conversation really solidifies a lot of things that's happening in our world right now, my world in particular. When I first started a certain relationship, I had a dream of a burning building, and it's kind of funny that you mentioned that. And I think that your speech is going to be so phenomenal, because I think that it's very important that a lot of that mirrors you. I don't know where the feedback's coming from. But it's very important that one thing that you said about African Americans, we understanding who we are and what we do to ourselves, our own accountability, how we tear down our own house, our own neighborhood, and how we don't stand for what we believe in. I think that we think our words have no meaning. So it's not detrimental to ourselves, to our relationships, to our communities. And I really applaud you for what you said about our businesses. We're never going to move forward as a people because we are not good listeners. We don't understand each other, and we don't understand our contributions to it. Why? Because we don't get who we are. We walk around here playing God, little g, but we act like we have the presence of the big G. So there is no God in the relationship. So I wanted to applaud you, you know, for what you were saying. And I know this conversation really got, it turned political and everything, but you were really, really hitting on a lot of things. And I think that you're really going to bless a lot of our listeners, because it does start with a certain discipline. We have to, again, understand who we are, why we're here, and what we're doing. And that's what we're lacking and what we're missing, because we got all these distractions. And we think that if we go over here, it's going to be greener over here. This person over here has our answer. Because we don't want to work for anything anymore, Mr. Williams. We want other people to do it for us. We're in a microwave system. We speak under 140 characters, and we burn down our own house before we'll burn down other neighborhoods. So it is very, very, to me, you bless me. I had to come on and say that, because you helped me make a lot of decisions in my own life and in my own world. Because sometimes you can fight for something and it ain't even your fight. And you're never going to win that. Why? Because when you're fighting a war, you're fighting battles that don't even understand itself. You're going to always, always fall. You're going to always lose because what you bring will never be seen, respected, or reciprocated. And that is the real problem with a lot of our relationships. So I really encourage you to keep saying what you say, because I think on every interview, you're going to bring something to the table because you don't understand how this just turned into a sermon. I didn't even know that I had to talk to you. I didn't know. I'm telling you, you were sent today for me. I don't know about nobody else, but I'm telling you right now, I am testifying, you were sent today for me because, you know, sometimes you just, you fall on your own sword and you're like, why do I want to quit? Why do I want to stop? And then a little voice whispers and say, you know what? You can't win this battle. This thing is bigger than you. It's bigger than you. And when you fight something, when the enemy is within, you can't beat them because, first of all, there will never be no accountability. There will, it will always be somebody else's fault. It will always be, oh, it wasn't my discipline. Oh, it wasn't this. I did this. I did this. I did that. And this is why we as a people, Mr. Williams, why we're falling. Because instead of us taking care of our homes and our communities first and taking care of the people who are on our side and who look at like us, we go out there and help everybody else. And we will give our best to everybody else, and that's a really sad reality. And this is why we're in this situation. And to go back to what Philip was trying to explain, when a Margaret Singer came into the conversation, she was the person who took that whole movement, took the black man out of the home. And since then, we haven't been the same. We've been at war with each other, and there lies the problem. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, I mean, we don't learn how to come together, we're in trouble.
Well, see, and I do stand corrected, Brother C. You were right, 1936. I'm looking at it in front of my face. So you are true to what you said, brother, so please forgive me. I do stand corrected on that because it was 1936. Senator Paul Douglas of Illinois made the observation about after the Great Depression with 18 million on welfare. So please forgive me. I stand corrected on that. And Madam C.J. Walker was her last name. But what happens is I get so excited, and sometimes I misspeak, but my intentions are what they are. Please forgive that. But what happens is the power struggle in the black home, when white masters would – it was systematically done through Jim Crow. Because what happened is they take the black man and they beat him in front of his wife, in front of his children, and then they go and rape his wife and his children in front of his face, and they say, what you going to do about it? So now how's a black, how's a black woman supposed to respect me when I just let this white man rape me in front of her and my kids and my daughters in front of him? They took away his power. They took away his power. And it systematically just continued from then. Even when we became free, we bought land. Ku Klux Klan came on our land, lit those torches. You ain't going to do nothing about it, boy. Tell your wife, get over here. You know what I mean? And now, how do you translate that into American society now? Same old thing. We get the money. And what do we portray our women as? What do we portray our sheroes? How do we uplift our sisters? Putting them in videos with nothing on. Put them in videos with nothing on. Every artist that you see that is a black shero today started out with clothes on it. Love Beyonce, but including her. They start out with clothes on. By the third album, they butt naked. Why? Because sex sells. Sex sells advertising. Sex sells albums. Sex makes numbers. And it happens. And so what happens is there's no filter. There's no censorship on what you won't become. That's why I love Missy Elliott. Because Missy did that thing and kept her clothes on. Not saying everybody needed to be Missy Elliott, but there need to be somebody like an NDIRE and a Missy Elliott. You know, and there go your light skin versus your dark skin. I think NDIRE, personally, had more talent than Alicia Keys. But because of that dark skin, light skin thing and marketability in our world, in our music industry, the light skin girl gets the pass and the dark skin girl gets, you know, you got to get put in the dark side. And she's still gifted, and she's still talented. And, you look at Tracy, and, whatever.
I would like to add Valerie to this conversation because I believe she would like to comment on that because we talk behind the scenes and she often says that as well, that if you of melanated skin, darker melanated skin, then, you know, people treat you a certain type of way or may perceive you a certain type of way, not getting you know, certain opportunities, or so to say, light skin, dark skin, you know what I'm saying? So,
right.
You know,
social status. Social status.
Right.
And especially in the South, because in the South, it was a social thing. For most Southern belles, the lighter you were, and the light skin, dark skin came about by master sleeping with the slaves. Because when we came over here, we was all dark. But then master started sleeping with this slave and that slave, and then this one started coming out with stringy hair and all that. Mixed races didn't start now. It started way back in slavery time. And it continued on, and that's how you had black light-skinned folk. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't come over here from Africa with long hair and blue eyes. You know, you see it now because it's a result of our history. Has anybody ever apologized for it? No. Do you think Donald Trump would ever apologize for it? No. In fact, he perpetrated even more because I live here in New York. I can't get an apartment in Trump Tower, nor would I want to. But him and his father systematically set it up so black people can't even move into Trump Tower. Not here in New York, not on 59th Street. And there's eight different, he owns the whole West Side Highway here in New York. And I'm just saying, this man is appropriating his legacy while he's still in the White House doing every... Can you imagine if Barack Obama got caught busted paying off hookers? Going into the White House. Paying off hookers. Paying off porn stars. Then saying this other country was a piece of shit. Then saying this other country was this. And Africa was a garbage country. And Puerto Rico was a garbage country. And then making deals with the Ukraine on the telephone, and there's people coming out saying it in the transcripts, and then he goes, "Well, I was only joking." Come on, man.
Well,
come on,
well,
and we, you know, we went from Barack to this. We done fell off the ledge, man.
Hey, I'm gonna say this. I want you to, if you're not doing anything Friday, all right? Friday, this Friday, on this network, the same network at the same time. 4 p.m. Eastern, is the Judge Joe Brown Show right here. And we'll be addressing exactly what you're talking about on that show. We have a guest coming. We have a special guest coming. We have Mr. Washington. He's coming, Isaiah Washington. He'll be joining us on that show, as well as someone from your area, from New York, and his name is Kingface. And Kingface will be joining us on that show Friday, and I would like for you to join us as well. I think you would make it very, very interesting to have you on that show as well. So yes, behind the scenes, can we get behind the scenes after this show today to make that official and add you as a special guest to Friday's show so we can touch this topic? And the only reason I'm doing this is because we're getting towards the end, and I do want to address your music, your album, your new album you got coming out in 2020, as well as the song that you have right now with Kool Million as number one in the UK, Stronger. So I want to give you an opportunity to expand on these things before we have to end the interview. So can we get together behind the scenes after today, after this show, and confirm you for this Friday show?
Absolutely.
That will work. That will work. Thank you so much. So with that being said, let's go ahead and talk about the song. Number one in the UK right now with Kool Million, and the name of the song is Stronger. Let the listeners know what it's doing. You got it, listen.
Stronger was a song written by Rob Hart and my little brother, I call him David Tobin, over in Germany, in Hamburg, Germany. And they wrote it D-Train style but they did it 2019 D-Train style. And we put it out over in Amsterdam in May. We released it in the UK, and it immediately went to number one over there on the charts. And so I went and spent the whole summer over there touring, doing the festivals. What Stronger is basically, the Vamp section says it all. Stronger is the way I live, no matter what. Most people, wait a minute, Stronger is the way I live. It's, mm-hmm. it's all about positivity. I can't remember the words exactly, but it's all about positivity. And what I've learned about positivity is one thing to speak it, and it's one thing to be it. You can wake up in the morning and have a bad day, or you can wake up in the morning and have a good day. Now, everything ain't going to be rosy when you open your eyes each day. The one thing that you can be grateful for is that you actually opened your eyes, because yesterday ended last night. So if you were mad at somebody last night, let it go. Let it go, because yesterday ended last night. Today is a whole new start. The one place where you and I are just as rich as Rupert Murdoch is we have the same amount of time that he does in a 24-hour day. We all get the same amount of time deposited in our bank account of life, 24 hours. He going to do what he does with his. What are you going to do with yours? What am I going to do with mine? See, that's the one place where we're all even, but we don't all end up even. We start out the same. It's 8 o'clock here. He's 8 o'clock where Rupert Murdoch is. But what you going to do with your 9 o'clock that he's going to do with his 9 o'clock? That's where you propel and you excel. And it goes back to that word, discipline. What are you disciplining yourself to do to get up and do? Because each day you get a chance to make everything different. So that's what Stronger is about. My new album, The Other Side of the Track, speaks of my experience in this music industry. I work with everybody on albums, from Bette Midler. I worked on Michael Jackson's Invincible. I sang on Luther Vandross's Dance with My Father album. Worked with, I did the Pokemon television series. The Pokemon movies, Keeping the Faith with Ben Stiller and Ed Norton in the movie. The Perfect Stranger with Halle Berry and Bruce Willis, I'm in that movie. So when you've done these things, it brings about a big plethora of experience, and it looks great on your resume, but how much of that have you lived? And how much of that did you absorb while you were living it? And so musically, working at the White House for 3 years, singing at the Kennedy Center Honors behind everybody from Bruce Springsteen to, Little Steven and those cats to Garth Brooks, I gained a whole different type of musical acceptance and appreciation that I had adapted into my life. Because at 57, what I listen to now is not what I listened to when I was 21. And I wanted to express that, because who you become at 57 is not who you were at 21. So I wanted to express that musically in all genres. Because what I learned from being in the UK, we have so many charts that segregate us over here. We got the pop chart, we got the rock chart, we got the old school rock and roll chart, we got the R&B chart, we got the soul charts. We got eight different kinds of R&B
charts.
We got eight different types of R&B. When did that happen? There was a time when music was either good or bad. They used to have Make It or Break It back in the 80s.
Right.
But in the UK, they have one chart for all music, black, white, R&B, whatever, one chart. And that one chart determines whether you make it or whether you break it. And so what happens is, I learned that musically, I can speak for a bunch of generations and for my own generation and for my own experience, because what's happening is, my teachers were Ella Fitzgerald. My teachers were, Billy Eckstein, Sam Cooke, Bobby Womack. Those are my teachers, And I can bring that into my lifestyle. But then I also learn musically from working with and listening to people like Todd Rundgren, Prince, Michael Jackson. The reason why I got into the music business is listening to I Want You Back in 1969. Ed Sullivan, Sunday night, 7 o'clock, I was there. I told Michael that. That was the first words out of my mouth when I walked in the studio. I said, Michael, 7 o'clock, Sunday night, 1969, I was there. Ed Sullivan, I Want You Back. How's your brothers doing?
Right.
Marlon, Tito, and Jermaine, they're fine. Oh, my God, I can't believe you're there. But it was fun, It was fun meeting him, and because this is a man who's made, he's left his mark on the industry. All of them left us too soon. So the other side of the tracks takes me to another area outside of R&B and dance, and takes me to a more global perspective and a more musical perspective in a roundabout way, where my experiences become your experiences on a global level and a musical level from all different types of genres. It's not pop. It's not R&B. It's not reggae. You know, it's not dance. It's whatever it is, because it's like a hot pot of jambalaya. I just threw it all in there and let it be.
And I did some research, and I seen you on an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about one thing that's missing in music nowadays, and that was the love thing. That there's no music written in love, and like the R&B songs mainly nowadays is like, how fast can you get naked? You know what I mean?
About the booty call.
That is the R&B, right, right. So like, will we get with the other side of the tracks? Will we get some love songs? Will we get just like a story of your life, or will it pretty much be bringing what's missing in the music right now?
Well, you know, following my album, I'm working on a new book called Keep On. That will be my autobiography. It speaks about my life growing up in foster care here in New York City. Me and my three sisters were the last of 13. And so, you know, we grew up in a wonderful foster home, you know, in Brooklyn, New York. And our parents gave us certain principles and things that we had to, rules that we had to abide by, and they were good parents. Not everybody had that in the foster care system. You know, not everybody grew up in a good home. So my thing that I, some of the things that I do nowadays is I used to go back and speak to the young people at the high school. You know, my daughter's a fifth grade school teacher, so I go back on their career day and tell them how I got to where I am. Because, you know, there was a saying, each one teach one. It takes a village to raise a child. Until you speak up and say something, these kids don't have a point of reference. That's the reason why music sounds the way it does, because these kids ain't listening to Aretha Franklin. They can only go back as far as Beyonce. But if they listen to Aretha, then they might create different music. If they listen to James Brown, if they listen to Sam and Dave, or, you know, the thing is, the reason why European young white people like Sam Smith. The reason why his music is so soulful and so whatever it is, and he's hitting the top of the charts, and people like Adele, because the people that they listen to is Motown. They're listening to Diana Ross and the Supremes. They're listening to Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. That's what they listen to in Great Britain, and that's how they calculate where they need to go. That's why they're hitting the top of the charts, and it's almost like the invasion of the body snatchers from Great Britain. But how many of our artists over here do you hear creating music with such depth inside of it like they are? Not many. Because we're following the formula of what is here in America.
Mm-hmm. So do you believe that would that music sell? As far as the authentic music, because you got artists out here, most of the artists who are creating that type of music are independent artists. They are the artists out here trying to get discovered. They are the artists out here trying to get their music heard. But it's like they run into the gatekeepers. They run into the people who keep it away because it doesn't sound like the trend. It doesn't sound like the trap. It doesn't sound like what's not. So how does those artists, how do they, with the discipline that they have displayed to keep going, how do they go about getting their music heard when they, you know, have that message, have that real authentic sound?
Well, now the blessing is, we are in an era where we live or die by our own sword. See, before, when I was first coming through here, you had to have a record company put you out there. See, people thought that people's albums got into the front of the store because their album was good, and that wasn't the truth. The reason why people's albums were in the front of the store and in the windows of Tower and Virgin Superstore was because the record company paid $100,000 to the record store to put it up in there for 6 weeks. Till the record became number one. Because what happens is advertising. They make you think that it's the greatest thing on the planet. since, you know, it's just like when Arnold Schwarzenegger came out with a movie. He duped everybody into believing the Terminator, the greatest movie that ever came to mankind. He said it every time. And whether you believed it or not, you went to see the Terminator. And why is he rich today? Because you went to see the Terminator. So what happens is, it's like advertising. And what happens is, the power is now back into the hands of the artist. The things that we need to learn to propel ourselves forward is social media. Social media is God in this music industry. Because what happened was, before, we had to rely on a promotion man from a record company, a distribution company, a one-stop mom-and-pop store to sell our records before it got to a major store like Sam Goody. But now that is unnecessary because everything is on the internet. Okay, that's a good and a bad thing because you can't autograph a download. I tell kids, if you want to put out an album, put out an album and put out some, you know, digital music. Because when you come to my concert, I can't autograph your computer. I can't autograph your Instagram or your Twitter account. I can only autograph your album. So where it's a good thing is that it allows you to reach out to more people. Say your music doesn't hit here in America. I've been going to Europe since 1988. People think I ain't had a record out since 1982 in America. I've had so many records out in Europe that people would be like, what? So in Europe, my fame is greater than it is in America. And people say, well, why do you go to Europe so much? I said, because I need to go where I'm appreciated and not tolerated. In America, I'm tolerated. Why? Because the new game is Demi Lovato. The new game is John Legend. And I'm not hating on these young artists, but I'm just saying,
right,
you ain't hearing about Gladys Knight. And Gladys Knight just sang in the Super Bowl and killed it. She sounded so good. I went to see Gladys Knight last month with Will Downing at NJ Pack here in New York. She sang for 2.5 hours every song that she ever made without stopping. At 70-something years old, man, I was like, see, that's what I'm talking about. See, when you go to a Beyonce concert or even a Janet Jackson concert, they ain't singing. That's a tape playing with cue points. Because you can't do all that dancing and not run out of breath. So you can move your lips, and then they got cue points where you go, all right, y'all, come on, let's go, let's go. Boom, back to the tape.
Right.
And that's what we've been living with. Michael Jackson, all of that, cue points. So
let me ask
Michael ain't going to never go to horse. You know?
Let me ask you this, Mr. Wiggins. How much more time you got with us? You got about 10 more minutes?
I got 10 more minutes, man. I got a half an hour. What you want?
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. That's cool because I want to just keep it going. I don't want to rush you through it. Now that I know you have time, I just wanted to remain conscious of your time. So,
I'm good, brother.
All right. All right. Cool. So, yeah, let's go ahead and keep it going. Then. Let's go ahead and keep the
All right.
I'm enjoying the energy. I know Valerie was enjoying the energy and everything you were saying. So with the UK, you said you've been in the UK, and I like that expression. I like that expression that you said. I go where I'm appreciated, not where I'm tolerated. And so, like you say, in the UK, they appreciate that sound, that sound of music, the Motown era of music, and not. The fad music. So everything is appreciated to the point they have one chart for all music. So your music can fall on this one chart. And so, like you said, we have different charts. We have different genres of music. So many. For actually one genre. For R&B, you have different styles of R&B. Like, and I agree with that. So it's a constant competition out here. Always a competition. You mentioned social media is the best thing. You related it to God, so to say, in the music business. You have to have social media. You can reach all your fans. You can develop fans that way. But social media, if you're not buying, hanging in the social media, so to say, then it's just social media. Until you find a niche. So you find a niche that catches or goes viral potentially, because you never know what might go viral. But in order to work social media effectively and you don't have a viral story or a viral nothing, then you have to pay into that. You have to buy ads. You have to by bonds. You have to try to reach those people. So you can't just get on social media and think just because you got a social media account that you just going to work social media. No, you have to put content on your social media that appeals to people. Because if
you
don't appeal to nobody, you won't get no likes, no shares, no nothing.
Very true. That's why you have Facebook. See, Facebook has a store. Like you said, you got to pay to be on that store. You got different things that will boost your account. Google has different things that will boost your account. Instagram, all of them have these things that they call the boost of your account. And that's where you get into the money. But where I'm coming from is, like, actually, if you open up an Instagram, it's just like you said, those things go viral. So people show their little boy chasing the dog around the house. It goes viral. He's a superstar. There's a little kid, I forgot recently, he went viral. Oh, my God. Well, there was a young black kid called Kid President.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever saw him on YouTube. And his parents, and he would dress up in a suit, and he had a disease. He had that disease where your bones, if he moves a certain way, his bones break.
Mm.
He had a disease, and he would make these little commentaries, little 5-minute commentaries about what he felt about what was going on in the world. And in the next video, you might see him with a cast on his wrist because he broke his arm. Not because he was outside playing, but he broke his arm. And next one, you might see him in a cast on his leg because he broke his leg. Well, do you know these videos went so viral that the kid was invited to the White House to meet Barack Obama? And that video went viral. And he didn't pay no money for it. See,
right,
it's about
right.
your intuition. You got to have what people want. You got to have what people want. It's just like people saying, it's like when you go into the recording studio. Now, I can go to Babyface's recording studio, and he got a big old huge recording studio, and then all of a sudden, I got all this equipment at my hand, but if I ain't got a hit record in my pocket, then it's just all this recording equipment.
Right, right.
But if I got a little beatbox at home and a little tape recorder and the song is fly and everybody's on it and I record it on that little beatbox on a little iPhone and it hits and it goes, like you say, viral, okay, how much did it cost me?
Nothing.
You know, people think you got it doesn't always take money to create money. It takes intuition. It takes cleverness, because there's one thing when you're book smart, and there's another thing when you're street smart. If you got 100 people that's your friend, just 100, you start with that 100. Or 50 people that's your friend, because your 50 friends got 50 friends. And those 50 friends got 50 friends. And that's what I mean when I say start out for free, because you know 50 people in your family that would buy your record. So you sell it to Uncle John and Aunt Mary and Cousin Susie, and you start with them. And those 3 people know 3 people who know 3 people who know 3 people. And that's how you begin the multitude of people. You start your own village. You start your own thing. And then the people will pay you once it gets large enough.
Mm-hmm.
People like Jay-Z come looking for you.
That is true. That
you know?
Jews. You're dropping Jews.
What I learned from God is that you can spend all of your life looking for folks to help you. Oh, my God, if I can only get to Jay-Z, man, I know I can get put on. Oh, man, if I get to T.I., I know he'll do my next record. No, they won't. They don't know you. They don't know me. You know what I mean? So it's like, why rely on him? The one thing that you got is you. The only thing that you got at the end of the day is you. So you got to look yourself in the face and say, I'm going to go for it, I'm going to make this mine, and I'm going to just give it 100% of all you can do and ask of yourself at the end of the day is 100%. Now, if you got 110 inside of you, give 110. But if you got 100, get that 100 every day, every hour. People start to see your 100%. People start to acknowledge your 100%. And then it spreads like wildfire. Because they realize you ain't a 50% dude. You give more than you get.
Now that was for me. Now you said some things for Valerie that she said she had to acknowledge. That right there was for me. Because you're right. I ain't no 50% dude.
Right.
And like when you said that, that like punched me in the gut. And like, like I ain't no 50% dude. You know what I mean? And you,
right.
You know, you just dropping jewels, but that was for me to pick up. Like you put it down, I had to pick that up. Because
a lot of times
I don't give what I know I can, and it's not because of not wanting to work or not wanting success or anything.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it's just know how. Like not knowing the outcome is like, is this the right thing to do? And a lot of times there's no right way or wrong way. Just do
right.
it, right? And so
right.
I don't just do it. It's like I sit back and talk myself out of something because it ain't the right way. I don't have a step-by-step guide. You know what I'm saying? So if I had a step-by-step guide to most things, I'd be an awesome dude. But most things that really out here don't come with a step-by-step guide. You have people who've done it before you that you can probably, you know, take some things that they done, but it ain't going to ever work for you what they did step-by-step. You can only implement some things that and try it and make it work for you according to you and your life. So,
right.
But you have to give the effort. If you never give the effort, then you lose off the bat. And so that was for me. I will never know what I've become just being the 50% dude. Never knowing, you know what I'm saying, or what it
right.
is, not giving at that 100% and just doing enough to get by, pretty much.
Right.
Pretty much
well,
that's
see,
what it boils down to.
You have to start where you are with what you got. Because all you got in the beginning of your journey is you. And how high you
mm-hmm.
climb and how low you fall is up to you. There's a saying, whether a man can or whether a man can't, he's right. Whether you think
right.
you can or whether you think
yeah.
you can't, you're right, both times.
Yeah, yeah.
And the only person that
yeah.
makes the differentiation in that equation
mm-hmm.
is you. It's your self-talk.
You. Yeah.
You got to give yourself self-talk every day because there's enough people out there trying to discourage you from becoming what you know you can become. All of us are brilliant. All of us are great. All of us are God's children. He ain't make no type of mistake. So why are we settling for mediocrity being the norm when we can settle for greatness?
Mm-hmm.
How do you attain greatness? It starts with you believing in you. Not worrying about everything on the outside. Like I said, I always say this to folks, and I say it to myself. Martin Luther King said, you ain't got to see the whole staircase. Just take the first step. The thing I learned is the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. You want to win the New York
mm-hmm.
Marathon? Take the first step. You want to go across the world? Take the first step. Everything begins at the first step, but the first step always begins in your mind. And whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, both times, you're right.
Say that again. The first step begins where?
The journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step.
And
the first and
the
step
first
begins
step
with
begins
you. With you.
But you said in your mind. See,
oh,
that,
yeah.
That's what I'm
in your mind.
The first
well, everything
step
comes back to your mind.
Your mind.
Belief. Your belief. Your faith. Your faith doesn't start out in your heart. It starts in your mind. Because if you don't think it, you can't believe it. How can
mm-hmm.
you believe what you can't think?
Right.
You got to think it first. And then you can believe
right.
it.
Right. And the saying I always say is you have to see it before you see it.
Absolutely.
You know, you
got
to see it before you see it. So in order to see it, you have to see it in your mind. Then you have to see it once you do the steps, go through it, and bring it into fruition. Then you see it in the physical. But
well, here's the other thing.
In your mind first.
And after you see it, close your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Keep your mouth closed. Because everybody don't see what you see.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
mm-hmm.
going to be enough people to try to talk you out of what you see and what you believe. Till you start believing what they're saying, then you're going to be like, you know what, I think he's right.
Oh,
what happens is when you rely on the opinion of others, you downgrade
mm-hmm.
your dream because you're saying, I don't believe in you enough just to believe we can make it happen, you and me. I need Joe's opinion because Joe knows this. So since I need to go to Joe knows better than I do. And then Joe's going to tell you, well, man, you know, listen, man, I've seen a million people do what you do. It ain't really going to work. It ain't really nothing new. So, you know, why even do it?
Hey, but you know, but Mr. Witt, you know what? That's been my life. That's been my life until recently. Not now, but for real, real talk, that's been my life. I have a great idea. I'll run it by somebody. I'll be like, how you going to do? What you going to do? Then they shoot it down. Then they shoot it down. I never do. And then I look up and somebody else then did it, right? And it worked. You know what I'm saying?
And it was
so
your plan,
like,
in the beginning.
That was my, right. And that has happened an awful lot in my life. So I like this conversation. I'm really enjoying this conversation.
Oh, me too. Well, listen,
you know what?
You got to act as if your life depended on it. If there was somebody banging on your door with a gun right now coming in trying to kill you, you'd figure out, where can I get a weapon to defend myself? Or how can I get out of this apartment alive? And your adrenaline kicks in, and you move, and you act. That's the way you got to treat your dreams. How bad do you want it? Eric Dyson, he's a motivational speaker.
Eric Thomas.
When you want it as bad as breathing.
Right, like somebody holding you up under your breath. Right.
When you want it as bad as you need to breathe. The first thing you need to do after you think it is write it down. Write it down on a pad. It don't take nothing. Just grab a pen, get a piece of paper, write it down. Now, if it's an idea or an invention, I'd say put it in an envelope and self-address it to yourself, certified mail. Don't open up the envelope. Now, say 5 years later, somebody come out with the same idea you had. You can go to court and say, I had it first. What do you mean? Open the envelope. And if it's dated 2 or 3 years before, that person got to pay you now. So even though you might have not fully acted out on your dream, at least you had a sense enough in the mind frame enough to write it down so that it's yours. And it will always be yours. Even if somebody comes into fruition with the technology to bring it to fruition, it's still yours. You know, it's like if you created the light bulb and you said, okay, I think that these two atoms or so-and-so and so would be create an omitted lighting electronic diode. People don't know what an organic electronic lighting electronic diode is. Well, organic lighting electronic diode is what makes your computer screen light up. It makes your phone light up. It makes your television light up. It's these three, it's these lights at the bottom of the screen that nobody ever sees that brings out the color and brings out the brightness and brings out the brilliance. That's the difference between 720p and 1020p and 1440 and, you know, 4K and all of that stuff.
Right, 1080, right, I got you.
Organic lighting electronic diode. And it's evolving every minute. Now, if you think of something new for 5K, then write it down and put it in an envelope. So when they come out with 5K, it was yours to begin with. But never let your dream sleep. The richest place in the world is the graveyard. It ain't the bank. It's the graveyard.
Right.
And the graveyard is the place where dreams left unacted upon. Les Brown said this. Dreams that were left unacted upon. Visions that never came to pass. Because people didn't believe in them. They had to die when they died. And he said, what would it say of you when you get ready to die? And you land on your deathbed, and all your dreams of what you could have done and what you could become is standing at the foot of your bed, mad as hell at you. Mad as hell. Man, if you would have listened to us, we could have been this, and we could have did this, and we could have made this money, and we could have did this, and we could have lived here, we could have did this. How would you feel? Because at the end of the day, every time you drop one of your dreams off at the babysitter and leave them there, and abandon it, that's exactly what you're doing. That's like dropping your child off at daycare and not picking them up. Ever. Your dreams are the same way. Your visions are the same way. Those are your if you think of them as your children, you won't abandon them.
Well, I agree with that because I agree with that. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
I mean, you may not get along with the mama. See, in real world, you may not get along with the mama, but, hey, you love that kid. You know, you got a bunch of daddies and baby's mama dramas going on out here, but they love that kid. Dreams are the same thing. Dreams are exactly the same thing because your heart goes into that child. You look into those eyes, and those are your eyes. They wouldn't be here if it wasn't for your sperm. So those eyes are your eyes. Those lips are your lips. That nose is your nose.
Right.
You ain't going to let that go. You ain't going to let nobody hurt him. You ain't going to let nobody smack him upside the head or throw him down a flight of stairs, because that's when you become the other person, Beneatha.
Right.
And when Beneatha
right.
come out, hey, yo, it's all bets is off.
Right. And that's,
so,
that's real talk.
You're right. And so you got to treat that the way you treat your dreams. But you got to go in there with a fire like a mad dog and just say, listen, I'm not. It ain't over till the fat lady sings, and it ain't over till I win. And I don't care how long it takes for God to give me this blessing, I've got to wait. One thing life will teach you, man, is patience. Because they always say, he may not come when you want him, but he's always on time. God shows up in the most unlikely places at the most unlikely times, and you sitting there going, man, I wanted this 5 years ago. But then when you get it right now, you're like, oh, man, but I needed it now. And that's the way he works. That's just the way he works. And it's based on our faith, our fortitude, and our fight. There was a saying when I was a kid, at 20, your face is what God made it. At 40, your face is what you made it. And at 60, it's what you deserve.
So 40 is what you made. 60 is what you deserve.
Think about it. When you turn 40 years old, if you was doing drugs since your 20s, guess what you look like? Now, if you learn by your 40s and you change your path and you start doing the right thing at 60, then you can be a different person because you spent the last 20 years improving yourself.
That's real talk. That's real.
Yeah,
fun.
Man.
So look. I really enjoyed this interview, man. Like,
me too, my brother.
I know because it was so real that I spent most of the time listening and taking in because I needed to hear a lot of what you were saying, right? But I'm gonna have to have you back, man. But we can really get into your accolades. I did not get into the fact that you was on the Hercules Disney soundtrack. We did not touch on the fact all the films, the Football Factory, My Funny Valentine, Hot Chocolate, all the jingles and like the Satellite XM when you was on there. It's just a lot of stuff, like really your legacy, you know what I mean?
It's point of conversation for a long, you know, you can have a nice long period of conversation because that's the whole premise behind The Other Side of the Tracks. All of those things that you just mentioned are the reason why I did The Other Side of the Tracks, because it highlights a different side of my legacy and my journey. You see, life is a journey, and it's not about the destination. Success is not a destination to be reached. It's about the journey along the way, what you become. What do you become by what you believe? What do you become? 5 years, you fighting for a dream, for whatever dream you fighting for. And you got a point of destination. I want this house, this car, blah, blah. But then once you get to that house and that car, and you achieve the success, the outward success, what did you become by achieving that? How many hurdles did you have to jump? How many doors were slammed in your face? How many people told you no? How many jobs did you lose? How many cars did you get flat tires on trying to run up and down the road? How many women left you? How many girlfriends did you lose? How much of life did you live? Because your belief and your conviction will take you through all of that to where, and when you get to that place of your destination, that's where the journey just begins, because that's the point that you were trying to reach. That's why they always say, reach for the moon, because if you fail, you land on the stars.
You land on the stars. Yeah.
So you're like, hey, I didn't make it all the way, but I'm close.
And it's the flip side to that. The flip side to that is this. The lowest form of success is survival. So if you just out here surviving, then you successful, but that's the lowest form because you ain't caved in yet, but you just surviving. And as if you keep surviving and just doing that, you in survival mode. Any day can be like that rock bottom moment by just surviving. So, yes, mm-hmm. I do believe in aiming for the moon so you can fall amongst the stars because survival mode, you only one step away from losing it up.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. So, with that being said, coming to the end of the interview, I want you to go ahead and have the final words. You give any final words, shouts out, whatever you want to do at this time, but please make sure to give all of our listening audience your social media, your contact information, so they can follow you and any type of purchase links where they can go out there and get the music. You got it. Let's get it.
Yeah, man. Well, you can follow me on Facebook at D-Train Music on Facebook. And on Instagram, it's D-Train Music. You can follow me on Instagram at D-Train Music. And so, you know, I'm working on putting my website together. And, you know, but on those two platforms, you can find me. Twitter is the same thing. You know, Twitter is probably James D-Train Williams. But they can find me out there. And I'm always, you know, Facebook, definitely. When you go to D-Train Music, you catch me.
Okay. Any shout-out? Anybody you
want to special? Well, yeah, I want to give a big shout-out to you, man, because you're keeping my music alive, and you've given me a voice in today's youth and in today's society, because I don't have a radio show, and I don't have a voice in radio anymore at this point. You know, I have a voice in the music industry, and my legacy is what it is. But if you stop playing my music, then no music will be played. So I appreciate you. I appreciate Valerie. I thank you guys for this interview. I thank God for you, you know, and for young people like yourself that's doing this because it brings highlights to what was so that they can know what they can be. I always tell young people, you never know where you're going unless you know where you come from. So to those young people out there wanting to get into the music industry, take a little time. Go a little further back than Beyonce. Go a little further back than Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey. Dip into a little Aretha Franklin. Dip into a little bit of Sam Cooke and Johnny Taylor or Otis Redding. Dip into the Temptations, Martha Reeves, the Vandellas, Diana Ross and the Supremes, and the Jackson Five. And there you will find your legacy, your history, and your beginning to where you need to start your journey.
Boy, you sure said a mouthful right there because I listen to all of them. But I wanted to give a special thanks to yourself, myself, to thank you for taking time out your day to come share the truth.
I love it, man.
I love this because I didn't send you no script. Valerie didn't send you no script.
You didn't
have no scripted questions, none of this. This is straight from the heart. This is straight from the hip. We shot straight from the hip, so... That's why this is so beautiful to me, because it helped both of us. Also, I want to give a thank you to our sponsor, Jeff Kwan, BTT Media Group.
Jeff, thank you, brother.
Yeah, and also, I want to give a special apology to Valerie Denise Jones, too, because me, myself, when something convicts you, I feel like the best thing to do is face it head on, you know what I mean, instead of try to run behind it. But when it hits you in the moment, you need to say it. So, Valerie, I wanted to apologize to you because I haven't been going like I needed to go, and you have been telling me, screaming in loud volumes, that how much of an importance it is that I lend myself wholeheartedly and give you my help. So, with that being said, I do apologize for that. And I will change and not be that 50% man and give you that 100% because I've been that 50% dude. And when you said that, Mr. Williams, like I promise you, it's like you gut punched me. I promise you, it's like you gut punch me. It was like, ooh. Like, man, you know what I'm saying? I wasn't ready for that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I wasn't ready for that. But it hit, and I thank God that right now I'm in the frame of mind to receive it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And not
right.
act like I didn't hear it, and not act like I didn't get gut punched. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
And to be real enough to say it. You know what I
right.
mean? So I appreciate you, man, and we're going to get together behind the scenes because I do want you to join us Friday. Because you will enjoy that topic, because it will be based on where we started in the beginning of the conversation, talking about politics, welfare, and we will be joined by King Faze and Mr. Isaiah Washington on the Judge Joe Brown Show this Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Same number, people, that you call right now, that is 929. 477-1167. And again, we want to give you a special thanks, special round of applause, Mr. D. Train Williams. Let's go ahead and
thank
give you.
You thank
that
you.
Special
all
round
the people
of applause.
Out there.
Hey, no problem. We got to give you that round of applause. So at this time, let's go ahead and give you the round of applause. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Yes, sir. No problem. It's been a great show, people. We getting ready to get up out of here. As always, get with it or quit it. Barbecue and men do. Some will, some won't. Some do, some don't. Oh, if you got a problem with anything I have said, you always got two choices, either check it or respect it. You can always get us at CeeLoTheGreat.com, P-H like phone, E-L-O-T-H-E-G-R-E-A-T.com, BossRadioLive.com, BossRadioLive.com, and Miss Valerie Denise Jones.com. So, with that being said, man, we up out of here, man. All right, Valerie!
We're always interested in what you have to say about our live broadcasts. Please share your comments on our Facebook page or websites.